Pacifico, Phil Hendrick.
I think it's up to the girl, frankly. I think that if she, you know, if she's okay with it and she...
Not charged. I know it wasn't rape.
The Republican health care plan is this. Die quickly.
In the Washington, D.C. case, all the Supreme Court had to do was determine what the Second Amendment meant.
You have been tweeting me.
Well, I hope you knew to use a condom.
World-famous Phil Hendrick show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Truth is our bitch on this show, and on this show, Democrats and Republicans and progressives and liberals and conservatives and neocons and what other little groups of hand-holding fairies there are out there, they all come here to die, man, because they do not stand up to the winds that blow on this show. And it may be a lot of hot air, but what does that tell you about your average ideologue, that they can't stand up to the hot air we're blowing on this show? I mean, I'm telling you, when it comes to what we're laying out here, every last one of them, they're just lightweights. I don't care who they are. We have got some stuff for you this hour, man. We're going to start off with David Letterman revealing an extortion attempt against him. And we have the audio from his show tonight as he talks a little bit about that. We also have another one of these bags of wind that was standing up in Congress today. A guy by the name of Representative Ted Poe was talking about all the czars that we have. All the czars. What are the czars? Czar. First of all, he wouldn't know a czar if the guy spoke Russian. Secondly, we don't have as many czars as he thinks we do. And thirdly, so what? And fourthly, no, it ain't unconstitutional, okay? You know, before you start whipping out this unconstitutional this and unconstitutional that, here's a tip. Read the Constitution. Lindsey Graham says that Republicans have got to get with it. They've got to stop with this birther bullcrap. They got to get all of the fringe weird asses. They got to get them out of their party. And that's not bad advice for Democrats to follow either. And speaking of fringe weird asses, Nancy Pelosi goes to bat for Grayson, the guy that said the Republicans want a Holocaust if they don't support the national health care bill. And so it's the usual rhetoric that everybody says they don't want, and they blame Obama for it, even though a lot of it's coming from Republicans. I know a lot of it's coming from Democrats. Let me ask you something. Since when does Obama tell the Republicans what to say? He can't even tell these Democrats what to say. He may say, I'd like a little more bipartisanship, if you don't mind, but they're going to go back and do what they do. They're going to keep throwing dirt clods and mud pies at each other. That's what they know how to do. Now, we got a few other things for you here, but let's start off with this very strange story, although it doesn't come as that big of a shock, you know.
Why do you say that?
I don't know, man. I always wondered about David Letterman. Was he married? Yeah, I knew he was married. He had a wife. He had a longtime girlfriend. But, you know, he always struck me as sort of a Bill O'Reilly with a sense of humor. Anyway, David Letterman said on his show, what are you looking at?
What do you mean, man? That's a big insult to David Letterman on account of he's funny.
Well, excuse me, man. He was funny.
Oh, you're in trouble now.
Oh, yeah, I'm in big trouble with worldwide pants, man. David Letterman said on his show, what are you looking at?
Speaking of worldwide pants.
Get away from my belt. David Letterman said on his show on Thursday that he had been the victim of an extortion attempt over charges of sexual affairs with staff members, and claims that he conceded, he did claim that they were true on his show. So he basically said that he had been the victim of an extortion attempt over charges of sexual affairs with staff members, claims that he conceded were true. Mr. Letterman said on The Late Show on CBS that he had been approached by a person who wanted $2 million not to go public with information that Mr. Letterman had been in sexual relationships with women who work on his show. Let's listen to David Letterman from his show this evening, just moments ago.
This morning I did something I've never done in my life, and it was a combination of just unusual and scary. This whole thing has been quite scary. I had to go downtown to the testify before the grand jury.
Yeah.
And I had to tell them how I was disturbed by this. I was worried for myself. I was worried for my family. I felt menaced by this. And I had to tell them all of the creepy things that I have done that were going to be... Well, now, why is that funny? That's, I mean...
And then he said, I hope you knew to use a condom.
So here he is talking about those creepy things.
Now, of course, we get to what was it? What was all the creepy stuff that he was going to put into the screenplay and the movie? And the creepy stuff was that I have had sex with women who work for me on this show. Now, my response to that is, yes, I have.
And the girl said,
I don't know where my husband is.
But that didn't stop David. So now you hear basically he was approached by someone who said he had written a screenplay and was going to put this into a book as well. These bits of information that he knew about Mr. Letterman, David Letterman had extramarital affairs. Letterman said he had been approached by this person. This guy wanted $2 million, guy, woman, I don't know who it was, not to go public. Letterman said that he testified before a grand jury and admitted to the relationships. And you heard what he said. Now, you know that Letterman married his longtime girlfriend in March. They have a son who is now six. In outlining to his audience what had taken place, Mr. Letterman said that 3 weeks ago he received a package from a person who claimed to have information about the relationships. Mr. Letterman said he reached out to the Manhattan District Attorney's Office. And in the course of the investigation, Letterman was asked to write what he called a fake check for $2 million. The suspect in the case was arrested on Thursday. Neither Letterman nor the district attorney's office revealed the person's name. In a statement late Thursday night, CBS said the suspect was an employee of the CBS News program 48 Hours and was arrested on charges of attempted grand larceny. Morley Safer is now in a jail cell.
You're kidding.
Yes, I'm kidding. Jesus.
You believed it, man. Well, you said.
No, it isn't Morley Safer. Anyway. It was an employee of the CBS show 48 Hours and was arrested on charges of attempted grand larceny. Now, Maureen Maher is in a jail cell. I'm joking. Anyway, the network said that the employee had been suspended. One executive affiliated with the Late Show said the DA's office intended to hold a news conference on Friday to fill in some of the details. Here are some of the details that we can fill in for you right now. A New York City Police Department source has told Radar Online, so take that with a grain of salt, but nonetheless, that the suspect under arrest in the David Letterman extortion case was a producer for CBS's 48 Hours, Robert Halderman. Halderman often went by his middle name, Joe, and currently has a residence in Connecticut. So the name would be known to some, according to Radar Online, as Joe Halderman. RadarOnline.com has also learned that the alleged extortionist lived with the woman who David was involved with. The affair, we say David as if we know him, who Letterman was involved with, but Radar Online, that, you know, they can't be too careful. The affair happened a long time ago, before his son Harry was born and before he got married, but he was living with his wife-to-be at the time. Halderman needed money, police say, and decided to target Letterman. The woman still works on the show but is no longer involved with David Letterman. The Letterman scandal exploded on Thursday, as you just heard, when the talk show host told his studio audience what was going on. At one point he said, "This morning I did something I've never done in my life. I had to go downtown and testify before a grand jury." The extortionist was given a phony $2 million check, and his arrest followed that transaction. Letterman admitted to sexual relationship with members of his staff. "My response to that is, yes, I have," Letterman said regarding his liaisons. "Would it be embarrassing if it were made public? Perhaps it would. I feel like I need to protect these people. I need to certainly protect my family." End quote, David Letterman. Letterman married Regina Lasco in March of this year. The couple began dating in 1986, and their son Harry was born in November of 2003. And that's it, man.
So Morley Safer got arrested.
You're an idiot. You know that?
I know. I'm kidding.
So this is an employee of the CBS show 48 Hours, one of their producers or otherwise a staff member. A producer, it says here, of CBS's 48 Hours, trying to extort money from Letterman. And the method was that he threatened Letterman with the public exposure of this affair that he had with this chick that he was living with and maybe other women. And I don't know whether this guy thought this thing out. I mean, I guess Letterman had the affair with this girl while he was still living with the woman that he eventually married, but he wasn't married to her. I don't know exactly how this is going to be worth $2 million. I think this cat picked the wrong guy.
Yeah, you figure it's got to be like a guy like Obama or somebody like that.
Not Obama, Obama.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could. Well, you're not going to extort the President of the United States if you know the cat. There's no way you extort the President of the United States. I mean, they couldn't do it to Kennedy. They had Marilyn Monroe killed. Now, anyway, I'm kidding. I don't know if they did or not.
Yeah, but I think they did, man.
Well, I don't. I'm not buying into any of that stuff until there's something a little bit more than some guy saying, boy, it makes sense to me. You know what I mean? It may make sense. It may make sense to a certain guy. It may make sense to you. But if it doesn't make sense to you, but you're supposed to believe it because someone says to you, it makes sense to me, that ain't proof at all because you don't know where that guy's hands have been or his brain. All right, our number 877-876-PHIL. By the way, the New York Daily News also confirms this guy, Haldeman, Joe or Robert Haldeman, is a suspect. Coming up, Congressman Poe and conservative pundits claim the government is being taken over by a shadow group of czars. Do they have a point? 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry. It's the Phil Henry Show.
877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Henry Show. The thing about the Letterman story is this. Well, this isn't the thing, but it's ancillary. It's related. The thing about the Letterman story is, in my opinion, who is this guy Haldeman? The guy's from 48 Hours. We were just saying if it was a guy from 60 Minutes, he might have really, he might have really sunk the gaff hook in Letterman. But this 48 Hours guy, he's a dim bulb. He says this guy's having sex with chicks on the show. I'm going to extort $2 million from a guy, a single man. Now, understand, this guy was married last year. The time frame we're talking about is sometime before Letterman was married, obviously. I believe he was living with his fiancé.
Yeah.
But that's not married, man. That ain't married. So he's living with his fiancé, and he's having extra fiancé relationships with girls at the office. Maybe it'll piss his fiancé off, and maybe they'll break up, but it's not a scandal like a married guy, you know. And this guy's thinks he's going to put his hooks into Letterman for $2 million. Are you high? What got into this cat? You talk about a guy needing the money. So anyway, but the thing of it is, with Letterman, you know, having relationships with chicks on his show, on his staff, and we were saying, obviously, and you know, that this is a lawsuit waiting to happen, friend, a lawsuit waiting to happen, an underling that is working in some capacity on your show. You are the boss. You're the host of the show. It's the David Letterman show. And you have relationships with women on your staff. Letterman doesn't need me to tell him this. It was a calculated risk that he took. He took it. It looked like he won until this guy came along. And this guy's going to jail. And Letterman's going to come out of this smelling like a rose. Because you can say a lot about a guy, but you can't necessarily say he's a 100% solid gold USDA-approved douchebag if he ain't married when he is sleeping around with women. And I suppose this goes to a larger question. If you're not married to a woman, if you're not married to a man, are you cheating on him if you are sleeping with somebody else?
Well, yeah. If you gave him like a ring or something.
What has that got to do with it?
Yeah, what's got to do with it? You agree with him. You always agree with him when you find out what side he's on.
No, I'm not. I'm just asking you. Well, what has it got to do with it, bud?
If you say that you're going to be not having sex with somebody and you're with a person.
Yeah, but you're not married to him. I mean, is everything in this world in lockdown every time? Okay, we're together. Dun, 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 dun. I don't know. I mean, I don't know the answer. Yes, I tend to be that kind of a guy. I'm a monogamous guy. That's the kind of guy I tend to be. Okay, I understand. I agree with you, bud. I'm just saying, am I thinking about this the right way? And you know, because it is, in my opinion, an open question or a fair question, we're not talking about marriage. We're talking about one's single life. How does this guy figure he's going to pull $2 million out of this caper from a guy that wasn't married at the time? Unless there is going to be a soon-to-follow sexual harassment discrimination suit, see?
Oh, yeah.
But I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think it's going to happen because it would have happened. If it happens now, then somebody's going to go, nope, that don't smell good to me. That sounds like or smells like or it feels like something, you know, somebody was planning something and everything's falling into place. And isn't this all very convenient? I don't think so. Thank you. All right. Moving on to other news having to do with this isn't exactly sex. Some people think it is, though. Whoopi Goldberg may be one of them. Maybe not. She has clarified her comments from yesterday. And by clarified, she meant to say rape only once instead of five times. I don't know. We'll get into that. But first, Los Angeles County District Attorney Steve Cooley responded today to supporters of Roman Polanski after his arrest last weekend in Switzerland, saying that the famed film director committed a crime. Asked about movie mogul Harvey Weinstein's description of Polanski's offense as a so-called crime, Cooley said Mr. Polanski pled guilty to a crime, and there are still five or six other, much more serious charges pending that have yet to be resolved. They won't be resolved until his final sentence. By the way, when this crime was committed, Harvey Weinstein had created Miramax. He was in his early 30s at the time, probably barely knew Roman Polanski, and now he's saying, well, a so-called crime. He was one of several people that were asked about this, and so he gave a stupid opinion, which is what I suppose what we want them to do when we ask these guys these questions. If you are in the world of entertainment and somebody asks you a question having to do with something other than entertainment, please be forewarned. They are ready to make you look like an ass at the drop of a hat, so watch what you say. Here is Jillian Michaels from The Biggest Loser reacting to the Polanski case.
I think it's up to the girl, frankly. I think that if she, you know, if she's okay with it and she feels that they're resolved, then who are we to say? But if the victim has issues, then I feel she should have retribution. If somebody drugged and raped my 13-year-old, I'd shoot him. So, I'm just saying.
No, it ain't. No, you ain't just saying. I hate that. I'm just saying. I hate that phrase, I'm just saying. Boy, is that redneck. No, it ain't up to her. It's a crime whether she thinks it's a crime or it isn't. Whether she's in love with the guy, it's a crime. Here is former Friends star Lisa Kudrow.
I have very mixed personal feelings about it.
Thank you very much. That was fantastic. Is that all? No, she says more?
I have very mixed personal feelings.
Well, get to it, will you? Get to it. Come on.
Yeah. Yeah,
but it seems as though
a 13-year-old girl is a 13-year-old girl. What makes me worried is what does that mean for other 12 or 13-year-old girls who are being drugged or seduced or, you know, offered up by their parents? I'm not saying that's what happened, but I just, you know,
no, that is
I don't
what
know
happened.
What we're saying.
No, that you don't. I have mixed feelings. You don't have mixed feelings. You feel exactly the way most people feel, and that is what happened. It was a 13-year-old girl given drugs. Now, here's Tom Morello from Rage Against the Machine, the one guy that's talking straight here.
He's probably one of the greatest child molesting directors of all time. I mean, that's something we can all agree on. I agree with that.
All right, there you go. So that was a group of people weighing in as they were walking into, it sounds to me like a movie premiere, although it could have been anything. It could have been just they were standing outside waiting to get a seat at a coffee shop or something, talking about this situation. Now, Whoopi Goldberg, as you know, yesterday said that on The View, she was talking about it not being rape. It was really rape, and it was whatever. Here's the flashback of what she said, and then we'll try to get the clarification in if we have time.
It's not charged. I know it wasn't. Rape.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, there was a
statutory rape.
I
child molest, maybe? I'm
I
not
think
sure.
It was something else, but I don't believe it was rape. And when we get all the information, somebody will tell me in my ear. All I'm trying to get you to understand is when we're talking about what someone did and what they were charged with, we have to say what it actually was,
okay,
not
so
what we think it was.
What he said
Well, then why don't you get the information? And by the way,
well, I hope you knew to use a condom.
Now, here she is clarifying.
Some people got the idea that I was condoning what he did.
Yes, you were.
So I'm going to be very clear. Okay. I was trying to make sure that we had our facts straight, because that's my job, particularly about what he was arrested for and what he was charged with. And here is what it was once and for all. He was originally indicted on six felony charges, furnishing a controlled substance to a minor, perversion, sodomy, committing a lewd and lascivious act upon a child under 14, engaging in unlawful sexual intercourse with a minor, and rape by use of drugs. All of these charges were dismissed except for the one he pled guilty to. It's the lesser charge of engaging in unlawful sexual intercourse with a minor, not rape, which was my point. So just to make sure that everybody understands, on this show, people listen to what we say, and I always want to make sure that we're putting out the correct...
Hey, Mr. President, what do you think of her?
He's a jackass.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. We'll be back on a world-famous Phil Henry show with more of the Whoopi stuff and more of the Polanski stuff. Is this more?
Phil Henry.
Well, yeah, there's more.
He's a jackass.
Hang in there, honey.
World-famous Phil Henry Show.
World-famous Phil Henry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, where truth is our bitch, where the news and the talk and the information, all this stuff here, we know what we're talking about, okay? And if you have tired of the clown act, you know, when it comes to issues and news, it's a clown act. You know, this clown act, it's just a big, fat, freaking clown act, man. And the only people that are getting clowned are the people that are watching this stuff. Then this is your show, you know, because we can clown it and I can still give you the straight scoop here. I don't have to pretend like I'm a conservative. I don't have to pretend like I'm a populist. I don't have to pretend like I really am outraged at what a Marxist-Leninist Obama is. I don't have to pretend that George Bush is a war criminal or pretend that I'm really upset over the fact that they say 3,000 people died on 9/11 when in point of fact it was 2,833.14. Like that Schuster jackass.
Oh, yeah, that guy, I don't know what he's talking about.
This guy was trying to make a thing out of that. I couldn't believe that. He was actually trying to make a thing. Maybe he was kidding, but I think I got a pretty good sense of humor. I don't get it. It wasn't 3,000 people. It was 2,821 and 3.2-4, subsection B. Speaking of Roman Polanski, and I want to just tie this in. This is the economy now. And it's Roman Polanski. Now, consider this. We're outraged, aren't we, when we hear the cavalier voices of celebrities. And I understand celebrities are people, and maybe they don't get it. And I have to say, I've been around some of these kinds of people, and they do operate in a universe that gets more and more insular as perhaps the weeks and the years go on. Sometimes you can hang with these people a little bit, and you'd swear to God they aren't really sure what's happening in the world beyond their world. So they'll say something like, well, it's not rape. It's rape, but not rape. And you want to ask them now, you're joking, right? Well, no, think about it. I don't think they have any connection, or if they do, it somehow has become warped. And why am I even bringing this up? Because they have weighed in, because they are members of an industry that Polanski's a member of, and because people are running off to find out what their opinion is, because their opinion might have some weight as to the, you know, guilt or innocence, as if there is any argument there, of Roman Polanski. Or maybe there's some extenuating circumstances we don't know about being a celebrity that makes you give drugs to and champagne to a 13-year-old kid. I mean, I'm half kidding, but maybe there is. I don't know. I don't think so. But hey, I'll hear out all the Whoopi Goldbergs in the world, man. You know, if that's what she wants to do, man, she can weigh in all she wants. But at the end of the day there, Whoop.
Hang in there, honey.
All right, now here, Roman Polanski, the film director, gets support from a Harvey Weinstein. Now, you might be interested to hear a little bit about this. In the county of Los Angeles this year, in the county of Los Angeles, where movies are made, you have to have a permit. In other words, you go to Los Angeles County and you get a permit to make a movie. And that means you are permitted to use certain streets. Maybe you want to use certain public services, which you pay for. If you go to a lot of these movie shoots, sometimes the security is provided by either retired police officers or off-duty cops. I've seen some of these retired guys. You know, I did a TV pilot once, and I saw like three guys on motorcycles, and they were all obviously older guys, but they were big dudes. This one cat was about 6'5", with gray hair, and he had his motorcycle there, and he had his big boots. And I said, "So are you?" He said, "I'm retired. I'm retired." I said, "Geez, you're about 6'4". Yeah. I said, "How old are you?" 75. I mean, this guy looked great for 75. So they use that. And these different things that you need if you're going to shoot a film, which obviously means you're going to be obstructing or in some instances intruding at least on the public thoroughfares and perhaps impeding, you know, business. So you, all of this has to be taken into account and you need to pay for it. In 2008, there were over 100, maybe over 100 films that were permitted, meaning not permitted as in you may, but given permits to shoot in the county of Los Angeles. In this year, and this is the month of October already, nine movies. Now, that isn't because the movie business is just depressed in L.A. and everywhere else. It's just fantastic. That's the state globally. Globally, film production has fallen right through the floor to the point that a lot of the names that you know, a lot of the big stars that you know, some of them are not even getting offered scripts. Some of them are not even being offered movie parts. I mean, it's just a recession, okay? Now, why am I talking about this, and why am I hearing a reverberation someplace, bud?
I think it's that drum. Let me see something for a minute. Yeah, that's got to be it.
That's what's making the noise in my head?
I think so, yeah.
Well, I'll ask Ralph. Yeah, I'll ask Ralph at the break. Anyway, so why am I talking about this in relation to Roman Polanski? Well, Harvey Weinstein is a guy who, his business ain't doing too good. Miramax. Now, he did make Inglourious Basterds, and after I heard what he said about Polanski and the so-called crime, I was going to go see your movie, sir. I think I won't now, even though I did hear it kind of sucked. No, I hear it's great. And I probably will still go see it. But the point is, I don't like you, but I'm still going to go see your movies. That's my boycott. I don't like you, but I'm going to see your movies. Now, Weinstein may have said what he said because his end of the movie business is going through the floor, and maybe he wants Polanski to direct one of his movies, for all I know. I mean, that's how, you know, things work. It happens that way in business no matter where. And I think most likely, not most likely, because I wouldn't know, but it could be that everybody's trying to keep everybody else's back scratched. You want to make sure that you don't piss anybody off. Roman Polanski's a heavy hitter. Everybody wants to work for the guy. They want to be in one of his movies. I mean, Adrian Brody, look what it did for, well, I was going to say look what it did for his career.
He ain't done a damn thing since he did the penis. It ain't called the penis, man. It's called the penis, and I always tell him that.
Well, don't fight him over it.
No, I'm always telling you that, man. Cut it out.
It ain't called the penis. It's called the pianist. Piano?
I know. I just piss him off. Always call him the penis. Call the pianist.
That was a great movie, but what are you trying to say? That Adrian Brody ain't done squat since then?
Yeah.
Well, you're right. Now, moving along, everybody wants to work with, so I think that that's why they're saying what they're saying. They just want to make sure that they don't get, they don't want to get their underwear in a bunch. All right, that is it for the Roman.
He's a jackass.
Polanski tale, and we'll keep you updated to whatever else there is. I don't know. Elizabeth Smart says that she was raped daily. Now, I don't know whether or not that's something Whoopi Goldberg would be interested in, or maybe it doesn't even apply. And perhaps it doesn't. In the one instance, Elizabeth Smart was taken against her will. In the other instance, this was a young 13-year-old that was invited, and she did assent. Can a 13-year-old willingly go to bed with an adult male? And can we call that consent or assent? I don't know. But nonetheless, Elizabeth Smart has given an interview, and it is quite, it's very moving, and it's grotesque, and it's one of those things. I mean, if you think about a girl, a little girl, who was taken off for however many months, I remember this story like it was yesterday, and when she returns, she is a ravaged, basically a ravaged and tortured adult. That's what happens. Not only did she give an interview, but she also took the stand for the first time since she was snatched from her girlhood bedroom 7 years ago. And she testified on Thursday that her captor raped her 3 or 4 times a day, kept her tied up with a cable around her leg, and threatened to kill her if she tried to escape. She was asked by a prosecutor to describe Brian David Mitchell, the self-described prophet accused of holding her captive for 9 months. She replied he was evil, wicked, manipulative, stinky, slimy, greedy, selfish, not spiritual, not religious, and not close to God. And that pretty much covers, that covers the waterfront, you know?
Oh, it's big.
So here is Elizabeth Smart's father, Ed. He breaks down in a press conference after his daughter's testimony.
You know, there were certainly a lot of things that I had never heard before. And I had no idea what she had gone through so much out there. I was very proud of her, the way she was able to be so forthright and basically paint the picture of Brian Mitchell, of what he is, and that if this doesn't clinch the issue of competency, our nation is in really, really bad shape, because it means that anyone out there can manipulate and make the court do what it wants and get away with what they want.
Brian David Mitchell's attorney, Bob Steele, says the testimony indicates that his client, Brian David Mitchell, the one that snatched and raped Elizabeth Smart, is not mentally competent to stand trial.
There's indications from what she testified to that that he is delusional. And there's indications that he also is off into his desires.
Here is Brett Tolman, a U.S. District Attorney, who talked about today's testimony.
We said all along that one of the most important things in this case would be those that spent time with the defendant, as the psychologists have not been able to conduct standard psychological testing. Those witnesses that had spent time with him and observed him are the most important, and none more important than Elizabeth. I thought she was graceful and remarkable, strong, and gave powerful testimony today.
A couple of ideas on capital punishment. She's a very, very quick, just a, you know, right underneath the chair, something like that. 877-876-PHIL is the number here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. We'll be coming back with more. Michael Moore is more, and he now says that capitalism never did him any good, man, even as he says he's doing okay, and that gives him a responsibility to people who aren't doing as well. But capitalism never did anything for him. How the hell are you doing so well, Moore, other than the fact that you inhale everything that's around you within, oh, I don't know, 5-6 square feet? We'll be back. World famous, maybe miles. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
You have been tweeting me.
Phil Hendry.
Oh, it's big.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
As if we needed any more evidence that some filmmakers, not all, some filmmakers think in a bizarre way, we have Michael Moore and some comments that he's made about his film Capitalism, a Love Story, and the fact, at least according to ABC News, that he has snubbed, and we'll find out what that means, snubbed union workers. Now, Michael Moore is an example of what I've often termed the, well, you've heard the term, the working class hero, the wannabe revolutionary, the bourgeois, the very comfortable bourgeois revolutionary. That's Michael Moore. Now, he can talk all he wants about being working class. My dad was a salesman. My father didn't work on an assembly line. My dad went to work every day in a suit and tie. And I still shoplifted food as a kid because I was hungry. So where does that put me in the pantheon there, Moore, huh? And by the way, Michael, it's very, very difficult to sell yourself as the victim of a lower or lower middle class upbringing and the victim of the tough times that come with being a part of a stratified society like America, a terrible society like America where we have this capitalist class and a poor class, when you weigh about 6 tons. And your ass is, it's made out of Twinkies. In any event, Michael Moore snubs union workers in making capitalism a love story, according to Russell Goldman of ABC News. Michael Moore used some non-union crew members when union workers were available in the production of his latest film, Capitalism, a Love Story. That doesn't surprise me. I bet you that's really shocking a lot of people. This was, folks, this was the case back when he made that piece of propaganda called Fahrenheit 9/11. And there are people to this day that still believe that was a documentary. You imagine the mentality of the human race. There are people to this day that still believe Fahrenheit 9/11 was an actual documentary, like it had something to do with reality. And not just Michael Moore's opinion of life. An internal labor union memo obtained by ABCNews.com added that the non-union workers hired for the film did not receive health insurance. Well, now shut my mouth. For all the different jobs in the movie that could have used union labor, he used union labor except for one job. The stagehands, represented by IATSE, said a labor source unauthorized to talk about Moore's decision not to hire members of the International Alliance of Theatrical Stage Employees. In a statement issued to ABCNews.com, Moore's agent, Ari Emanuel, said the filmmaker wished the union included more documentary crew people, but he did not deny that IATSE members were snubbed in favor of non-union employees. Said Ari Emanuel, the sad fact is the documentary verite theatrical films and the talented people who work on them are too often treated as second-class filmmakers when they are among the most creative, talented, and hardworking and often produce our finest films. Nothing would make Michael happier than for documentary filmmaking to get its due respect and to have union pursue the documentary film crews with the same energy they give to bringing feature crews into their membership and making it a viable option for them, he said. What he's basically saying, Mr. Emanuel is saying, is that the crews that work on documentary films are not union crews. Now, when you make a documentary, there's only one difference between making a documentary and making a theatrical film. You don't have actors in a documentary. You do not have actors in a documentary.
Well, what about like Fahrenheit 411 or whatever, or 9/11?
You're not supposed, a documentary has no actors.
What about United 93? They had actors.
That's not a documentary. That was a theatrical movie that they used actors to improv in. That's not a documentary. You don't use actors, but nonetheless, you have cameras, you have microphones, you have cable pullers, and you've got all kinds of people pulling it, man. Mostly the producers. They're the ones that are sitting around pulling it. You got all the guys that you need to do a movie other than the actors, and there's no reason why you don't use union people. Don't give me this jazz about how you're supposed to use only documentary style crews when you're making a documentary. You don't have to do that, especially a guy like Michael Moore who could go out and hire anybody that he wants. Now, here's Michael Moore explaining this. This guy's so full of crap, his eyes are brown, man. Listen to this guy. He's talking about capitalism, a love story, this, that. Then he talks about how he's doing well, but then he owes a lot to people. I'm telling you, Michael Moore. The only thing you should do, Michael, is stay off of TV, because every time you sit there as a talking head and you try to address something in the news, you sound like a blithering, bumbling, wiggling, jiggling Twinkie ass.
Well, capitalism did nothing for me, starting with my first film.
Thank you. In any event, no, here it is.
Well, capitalism did nothing for me, starting with my first film. You know, I had to pretty much beg, borrow, and steal. The system is not set up to help somebody from the working class make a movie like this and get the truth out there. In fact, with Fahrenheit 9/11, if you remember, capitalism, the Disney Corporation, tried to kill that film. They tried to make it so that people couldn't see it. My book, Stupid White Men, HarperCollins, tried to kill that book so that people couldn't see it. It's only because I put the light of day on it and told people what was going on did people get a chance to see these things. So, you know, and look, I mean, I make documentary films. So clearly, I'm not loaded in the way you described. But I do well, obviously, because, you know, my films do well. So that means I have an extra responsibility to make sure that I spend my time trying to make things better for the people that don't have what I have.
I've never seen a guy more exposed and without any clue as to just how exposed he is. When Michael Moore comes out and attacks capitalism, and then he says dumb things like, capitalism didn't help me. I mean, I had to beg, borrow, and steal. Okay, but wasn't it capitalism that eventually gave you the money to make the movie that you know, followed your first movie, and then even more money that followed that movie because it was capitalism that was interested in the product that you were making increasingly, and eventually you made a nice dollar? Isn't that capitalism? Are you kidding? Are you got to be kidding? And then I realize he's not talking to the specifics. He's not talking to the scientific definition of capitalism. He's not even interested in what capitalism means. To Michael Moore, capitalism means the following: the bosses. That's capitalism. And he hates bosses. The problem is, he's a boss. And not only is he a boss, it has been said more times than just once, he's not a very likable boss. He's not a nice boss. He doesn't pay well. He doesn't protect his people. He rips off ideas. He is, in fact, a hypocrite. He's not a documentarian. He's a propagandist. But other than that, what a great guy, you know. Capitalism, Michael Moore wouldn't know capitalism, man, if it was botulism. He wouldn't know capitalism if it was a load of Twinkies loaded down with botulism, because he'd still eat them. The fact is, to Michael Moore, capitalism just means bosses, and we all hate our bosses, and so go see my movie because your boss sucks. Ain't that right? And speaking of your ass, Michael.
Oh, it's big.
All right, we'll be back in a world-famous Phil Henry show, number 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-PHIL. Conservatives are attacking Obama over his trip to Copenhagen to try to get the stinking Olympics for Chicago. It's got to be something, man. What day is it? It's Obama Day, man. Michelle Malkin weighs in, if you'll pardon the expression, way.
Well, I hope you knew to use a condom.
We'll be right back. The world-famous Phil Henry show.
Phil Henry.